Under consideration this morning, I have a lesson. Some of y'all have heard some of this lesson. I call them principle lessons. And what I mean by a principle lesson is I like looking at the way things just deal with human nature and how people really haven't changed over the years. And there's lessons that go along with how to deal with people, but there's not a lot of thou shalts and thou shalt nots. Sometimes you have to kind of look at the big picture to get the indication of what we're supposed to be as godly people. It's a couple weeks ago, we were at a baseball tournament, so we worshiped up at the Glendora Avenue Church there in San Antonio. And there was a man by the name, I believe his name is Craig Perkins, was the guy who was speaking. And he was talking from John chapter 8. And as he was going through John chapter 8, I realized, well, this is a great principle lesson. So that's what we're going to talk about this morning. And I've called it the Pharisee principle. And you might subtitle this, The Art of Argument. And so I'm going to teach you how to argue today. And that's probably something you may not have ever heard in a sermon before. I'm going to teach you how to argue, how to interact with people, because it happens all the time. Spouses argue. And when I say argue, it may not be something heated, but we may just have discussions from time to time. And parents and their children sometimes are known to have heated discussions. Then you may have arguments at work with colleagues and with co-workers or with your bosses. But there's a right way and a wrong way to argue. And so as I was going through this lesson, it just seemed very interesting to me, this discussion between Jesus and the Pharisees. And it's not so much what they said, but how the Pharisees said things and what they said and how Jesus responded to them. Because I got to thinking about all the different discussions that I've been involved in my life, going back to some of my parent-teacher conferences I had to deal with, and the conversations about why I was not playing somebody's son in the position they thought they should be playing, or I wasn't playing them enough, or, well, I got called a whole bunch of things. And then I got to thinking about some of the deals that my dad has been through in his recently concluded 14 years in city government. And how he's, I believe his new line is, he's been blamed for everything except the invasion of Poland. And how amazing it is, and the things that people say and the attitudes they take in what should just be a discussion. So we're going to look at this morning what I call the Pharisee principle. So after we go to prayer, I need you to find a Bible, and I need you to find the Gospel of John chapter 8. Because it's a rather lengthy reading, so some of it I'm just going to paraphrase and pull out different phrases. So we're going to basically go through John chapter 8. Now let me tell you how it starts. The whole situation starts with Jesus in a dusty, dirty old field. Remember the story? It's one of the most memorable stories in the Bible, that these Pharisees and the scribes have come together and they brought a woman who was caught in the act of adultery. And they brought him to him to try to trap him, to see what he would say. And it's kind of fishy from the get-go, because if she was caught in the act of adultery, they should have brought the man too. But they just brought the woman to see what Jesus would do. And it says Jesus just stooped down in the ground and started writing in the dirt. And as far as I know, that's the only reference to Jesus ever writing anything in all the New Testament. But he's writing in the dirt, and I don't know what he wrote. And there's been all sorts of conjecture and guesses, but nobody knows what he wrote. But then he comes up and he says these famous words, "He who is without sin, let him cast the first stone." And it says those Pharisees all just kind of looked at each other, and then they just turned and walked out, one after another, from the oldest all the way to the youngest. And then Jesus had a discussion with that woman, and where he said, "Go and sin no more." So there's already some bad blood between Jesus and the Pharisees. And it happens to be all about this Jewish feast time known as the Feast of Tabernacles. And so it was a big deal. And there's a lot of discussion about Jesus and the Pharisees. And they were looking for something on Jesus. And that's where we enter the 8th chapter of John. We're going to have a discussion. And everything Jesus says, the Pharisees have something to say. And as we go through it, hopefully you'll begin to understand that it's just like every argument you've ever had in your life. There's some good parts about it and some bad parts about it. So for a little while this morning, we're going to pick up in John, the 8th chapter. So make sure you've got that ready to go as we get there. And we're going to study the Pharisee principle. Before we go further, let's take time now to go to God in a word of prayer. Everybody found John chapter 8. And what we're going to talk about, we're going to pick up in about verse 12. And here Jesus is speaking. Now it says in here, then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. Who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. If you notice, and it may be kind of hard to tell up here, I've kind of bolded some words. And so in each one of these slides where Jesus speaks, I'll try to bold it, because that is what made the Pharisees mad. It's whatever is in bold is what kind of got their goat, so to speak. So Jesus now is talking, and he says to them. Now, I don't know who that means. I'm assuming that the them is in reference to the scribes and Pharisees. Now, I don't know if it's the same them, the same scribes and Pharisees that just walked off one after another. I don't know if it's the same group or if it's another group of scribes and Pharisees. I don't know. But he says he spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. This is what caused the problem, is that Jesus was making a self-proclamation. And he was up here saying, I am the light of the world. And this was all about the time of the Feast of Tabernacles and the whole notion of light and darkness and waters. And there was a whole lot of symbolic things that were going on that I believe Jesus was making reference to. And so Jesus here is making a claim, and he's making a claim of himself. Now there's kind of a problem with that. And that's where the Pharisees get upset. So the Pharisees are going to make 10 comments. And their first comment is, your witness is not true. And so I've read that before, and I don't think I really understood what it meant. The Pharisees were not calling Jesus a liar. And that's what I always kind of took it to be. But they weren't calling him a liar. Think about that word true as the word valid. He says, your witness is not valid. Your witness is not accepted. In a legal system, and that's all we need to think of this as, they're making a very valid argument. They are making a true and valid case against Jesus. And they're saying, your witness is not true. We might say, it's not admissible. That's the way we would say it. If this was to be brought up in a court case and Jesus was to stand up and say, I am the light, that opposing attorney would say, I object. That testimony is inadmissible. That's what they're saying. They're not claiming that he's a liar. They were saying that the witness was inadmissible. They were not allowed to testify for themselves. So now I think, well, what in the world does that have to do with anything? Well, the actual point of contention was centered around the idea of being a witness. And it was centered around authority. Who is this Jesus? And what is his authority? And what right does he have to come and tell me anything? Let me give you an example. It was a couple years ago. I know it's been a couple of years because I think we still had an answering machine. So I don't know how long that's been since we've gotten rid of that and gone to voicemail. But came home one day, and there was a message on the machine, and my memory gets real, real foggy after about 10 minutes, so I don't know if I'm telling this story exactly right. But there was a call on it, and it was so-and-so from the IRS, and there was some type of a problem with our tax return, and we had been assessed a fine. And we could take care of the fine as long as we sent a check to somebody within 2 days, then it would all be cleared up. If not, then it would go to the next level, in which case there may be an audit involved. That didn't sound right to me. That didn't sound right. So we called the accountant. Sure enough, it was a scam that was running around town. I'm not going to send somebody a check because my first question would be, who are you? You say you're from the IRS. Well, anybody can say they're from the IRS. I can tell you right now, I'm the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, that doesn't make it true. I mean, people can say whatever they want to say. And that's the same type of idea. Jesus is saying, I am the light of the world. And the Pharisees say, you can't make a self-proclamation. You have to have witnesses. You have to have somebody corroborate your story. And before we get too hard on these Pharisees, do you realize that Jesus said exactly the same thing a little bit earlier? From John chapter 5, verse 31. That's what Jesus said. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. He's not calling himself a liar. He says, if I bear witness of myself, then that witness is inadmissible because you can't have just one witness. One witness under the Jewish legal system could not prove innocence, nor could it prove guilt. You had to have more. Go through and read John chapter 5 sometime, starting about verse 31. And that's exactly what Jesus says. He says, if I bear witness of myself, it's not admissible. So he goes on to mention other witnesses. He said, but there's another guy, there's another witness named John the Baptist. And John the Baptist is a separate witness. Then he mentions the works that he had done as being witness. All the healings that he had done. The dead being brought back to life. The blind being made able to see. The lame being made able to walk. And then he says, my Father in heaven is also witness to all these things. And so what Jesus is doing is he is giving different numbers of witnesses because one witness was not enough in the Jewish legal system. You couldn't do it. It didn't prove innocence, nor did it prove guilt. That comes from Deuteronomy 19 and 15. One witness shall not rise against a man concerning any iniquity or any sin that he commits. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter shall be established. That's just the way it was. You had to have witnesses. So the Pharisees were not getting after Jesus and saying he was a liar. They were just saying, you can't make a self-proclamation that you're the light of the world. That's inadmissible. I need more proof. I need more witnesses. Give me a further example. Remember the transfiguration when Jesus was transfigured up on the mount? Who did he take with him? How many did he take? Did he do it by himself? No, he took three. He took three people because he had to have three witnesses under Jewish law. So nothing could be made formal unless there were at least two, preferably three witnesses. That was the Jewish legal system. So as we go through this argument, think of it as a legal case because that's basically what it is. The first argument that the Pharisees have is valid. And I want you to keep that in mind because most arguments or discussions, whatever you want to call them, debates, they usually start with a point of contention. They usually start with something that is valid, whether it's the trash contract or whether it's anything at work, why this is done or this isn't done. There's usually something valid to discuss. And that was the valid point today, is that Jesus is going to discuss his authority and witness. That's what he's discussing with the Pharisees. So he continues. He says, even if I bear witness, verse 14, of myself, my witness is not true. See, Jesus knows it's not valid. He knows it. He says, my witness is true, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you do not know where I came from and where I'm going. You judge according to the flesh. I judge no one. And yet if I do judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I am with the Father who sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one who bears witness of myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness of me. So did you see what Jesus just did? He addressed that valid argument. He addressed the argument of authority and witness. We have to have two. So he says, I am one who bears witness of myself, number one, and number two, the Father who sent me bears witness of me. So he's just, that their argument was, you don't have a valid witness. And Jesus responds, yes, I do. Here it is. I can speak of myself and the Father who sent me. It's a logical, valid argument. Now I want you to think about this and let's see if we can anticipate the next question of the Pharisees. Let's say I've been given a big old check and I'm going to go cash that check and I'm told that I need two forms of identification to cash that check. And so I walk up to the bank teller with my driver's license and I say, here's my driver's license and my second form of identification, I'm going to use my social security card. And I hand her my driver's license and then I just step back and wait for my check. What would the logical question be? Wouldn't they ask, well, where's your social security card? I mean, you said you had it, but where's your card? That's exactly what the Pharisees said. Jesus says, I've got two witnesses. I am one who bears witness of myself, number one, and number two, the Father who sent me bears witness of me. What is the logical question for the Pharisees to ask? All right, where's your Father? And that's exactly what they asked. Where is your Father? That's the second question. Where is your Father? Perfectly logical. When you get into a discussion, you get into an argument, you've got some valid points. Don't get your feelings hurt if people ask what I just called here a follow-up question. Pharisees weren't doing anything wrong. They asked a very logical, follow-up, clarifying question. Let me tell you, they didn't really understand this whole idea of the Father who sent me. If you keep reading, it's really very logical. Verse 27, John kind of editorializes as he's writing this, and he says that they did not understand that he was speaking of God the Father. They did not understand this, how big of a concept this was. So when these Pharisees were asking, okay, you say your Father's your witness, well, the logical thing is, well, where's your Father? And makes sense to me. Well, Jesus continues. He says, Jesus answered, verse 19, you know neither me nor my Father. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. In verse 21, he says, then Jesus said to them again, I'm going away, and you will seek me, and will die in your sins. Where I go, you cannot come. And that's the part that really gets them upset. Where I go, you cannot come. So you know what they do now? This is what happens when you get into an argument. They kind of get smart aleck a little bit. And they say, what's he mean? Where I go, you cannot come. Does that mean he's going to go kill himself? And so they take the words of Jesus and twist it. So we've already been through the argument once. He has answered the question about witness. He's already set it up. And then they throw something completely out of left field and they try to twist the words of Jesus. You ever had that happen before? I cannot tell you how many parent meetings I've sat in where they try to take something that I've said and twist it and throw it back in and try to make it look like I'm wrong. Just a part of arguments, I guess. When people start getting desperate, they start looking for anything they can. Oh yeah, well you just said this. And they'll try to turn your words and twist it and get after you. That's the favorite trick of many who are arguers. They take your words and they try to use them against you. And here's where I don't do so good sometimes. When people start doing that to me, it aggravates me. But I want you to notice, how did Jesus respond to this episode? And you know what he did? He ignored it. He didn't even pay it any mind. He didn't pay it any attention. They're sitting there trying to twist his words about, oh, he's going to go kill himself. Oh, he's going to go commit suicide because he said that? Is that what you're trying to say? You're saying you're going to go out and kill yourself so we can't follow you? And Jesus just flat out and completely and totally ignored this rabbit hole adventure that the Pharisees were trying to get Jesus down. And that's one thing I'm not very good with. The Apostle Paul tried to give us some admonition of that. He wrote to Timothy, 2 Timothy 2 and 23, but avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing that they generate strife. We got to be smart enough to know when an argument has gone off the rails and people are just trying to make us mad and get us off the course. Sometimes easier said than done. Well, Jesus continues. He just flat out ignores it. He doesn't even make any discussion whatsoever about you're claiming that I'm going to kill myself. He doesn't even mention that. He says, and he said to them, you are from beneath, I am from above. You are from this world, I am not of this world. Therefore, I said to you that you will die in your sins. For if you do not believe that I am he, you will die in your sins. He just ignored it. He didn't even dignify that response or their comment with any type of response. He says, if you don't believe in me, you will die in your sins. So what are we going to go back to now? How does Jesus have the authority to make that comment? So guess what the Pharisees say? Number four, who are you? And this is something that I learned very quickly about arguments, discussions, parent conferences. We've all probably been in this situation. We're going to go meet with someone we're upset about. Oh, we plan it. We plan it. We've got our speech memorized. And we think about it all night long, and we think about it in the shower, and we think about it in the car, and when we get up to them, we let them have it. And I was always taught as a teacher, when you have a mad parent, you let the parent speak first. Let them get it off their mind, and they're going to go out, and they're going to say what they're going to say, and it's going to be a script. And you just let them say it. And then you can answer, kind of go back and forth and talk. But you know what happens after a while? The argument starts over. This is the exact same thing. That was the valid argument, remember, from the beginning about whether Jesus had the authority and who he was and who his witnesses were. He's answered it, and it should be over. But now what do the Pharisees try to do? We try to start the whole thing over again. And this is where I would get aggravated. I used to have a rule. First time through, I'd be about as nice as you could be. Second time through, I had to start explaining the same thing again. I'd start getting a little aggravated.
By the third time, I'd go as long as I could. But after a while, you just get tired of answering the same questions over and over and over. So even with Jesus, I want you to notice, as the argument starts over, notice how the tenor of the conversation begins to change. So far, it's been pretty up and up. It's been logical. It's been very nice, I guess you would say. But it's not going to stay like that for long. So Jesus says to them, and I love the way Jesus says this, verse 25. And Jesus said to them, just what I've been saying to you from the beginning. He said, it's the same thing I've been telling you since day one. We're just starting over again. I have many things to say and to judge concerning you, but he who sent me is true, and I speak to the word, and I speak to the world that those things which I heard from him. And now he's going to make another statement in John 8, verse 31. And I just remember this because of the old Sanford and Son show. This was Aunt Esther's favorite Bible verse, and she'd like to get after Fred with it. Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, if you abide in my word, and you are my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And I bolded, the truth shall set you free, because that got the Pharisees going again. You know what they said? Number five. What? Us, the Jews? We have never been in bondage to anyone. How can he say the truth shall set us free? We've never been in bondage to anyone. And this is where I didn't do a very good job of the Pharisee principle. I can handle just about anything except for lies. And when people start lying to me, I didn't handle it very well. And that's exactly what the Jews are doing now. You know what I would have said if they had told me, we've never been in bondage? You know what I would have said? What are you talking about? You've never been in bondage. What about Egypt? What about Assyria? What about Babylon? What are you doing right now? You're under Roman bondage. How in the world? Are y'all really that ignorant that you can claim that you've never been in bondage? And it'd be about that time when people start lying to me and saying false statements to get me off my game? Oh, I would have gotten off my game. It would have. It would have made me mad. It would have upset me, and I'd have taken off, and I'd have probably come back on them. But you know what Jesus did? He just ignored it. He just ignored it. He didn't call them on their false statements. He didn't say, oh yeah, aren't you under Roman bondage right now? Where's Pontius Pilate, your Roman daddy? I would have said that. But Jesus did it. He just allowed it to, for them to speak their peace. And then he took the idea of slavery to a new level, this idea of bondage. He says in John 8 and 34, and Jesus answered them, most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. So he takes it to a whole spiritual level, the idea of slavery. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed. Verse 37, I know that you are Abraham's descendants, but you seek to kill me, because my word has no place in you. I speak what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have seen with your father. Oh, and Jesus brings up the idea of Abraham's descendants. You also notice the conversation has turned a little bit. Jesus is not being quite as amicable as he was earlier, as we keep circling back to the same concept. He's starting to call them out a little bit now. And these Pharisees are starting to get a little bit upset. And they make the statement, number six, Abraham is our father. And so what has happened now in our argument? The argument is pretty much over because we've started choosing sides. And when you draw that line in the sand and you have, well, I'm going to be over here, I'm not changing my position, and the other person, well, I'm not changing my position, I'm going to tell you, might as well stop the discussion. Because there's nothing that can be discussed anymore. It's about to start getting ugly. And again, we've returned to the original argument. Those that were of the lineage of Abraham claimed special blessings for God. They were God's chosen people. And who was this Nazirite to come down and tell them what to do? He was just the carpenter's son. And here he is telling me how to live and how my religion is been fulfilled through him. They didn't take it very well. They did not like it very much at all. And here we go. John 8, verse 39. You'll almost miss this one. I did. And Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. Abraham did not do this. You do the deeds of your father. Oh, and that was just a softball. Softball. You do the deeds of your father. You know what the Pharisees responded with? Well, at least we're not born out of fornication. You know what they were talking about? That was a personal attack. Did you know that there was a rumor going around in those days? The whole story of Jesus being born of Mary, but the Father was, they didn't really understand that. And there was an entire rumor that circulated that Jesus was actually the son of a Roman soldier. That there was some, that Mary had gotten kicked out of the house and Mary had met up with this Roman soldier and Jesus was actually an illegitimate child of this Roman soldier. And so that comes from a writing by the name, if you want to Google this, the original guy was named Celsus. And Celsus wrote this, but his works were lost. But Origen quoted him and nearly quoted the entire book. And so that's kind of where we get a secondhand historical reference from it, that this Roman soldier, supposedly by the name of Pantera, was actually the father of Jesus Christ. And so that's kind of a snide little comment there. Well, yeah, well, at least we're not born out of fornication like this guy. You know, personal attacks. When arguments go downhill quickly, that is usually one thing that people start to do. I'll never forget one of the lowest points, I guess, of coaching. You know, I had a pretty good team and had 5 outfielders. Well, only 3 play at a time. And depending on who pitched, a 4th one got the play. And the parent I was dealing with was the parent of number 5. And he just... So we had a nice little discussion, and we talked a little bit about why he was not in the top 5 and what he could do to get there. And so then the discussion came back again. And the argument started all over again. I explained it again. I was pretty nice the second time. And then the third time, the argument started all over again. And this time, you know what he told me? The only reason my kid's not playing is because you're nothing but a racist. And boy, that made me mad. That made me mad. You know what I did? Jesus is going to ignore it. Nah, that's not what I did. I'll let him have it. I mean, I kind of just told him how the cow ate the cabbage. I said, that doesn't make sense. I have a white left fielder. I have a Hispanic center fielder. I have a black right fielder. And the 4th guy is half Hispanic, half white. I don't know what else I can do to be more racially equal. I don't know what else I can do. But it made me so mad because he made a personal attack against me, which is exactly what the Pharisees did. And that happens all the time in arguing. Someone starts losing. They say something that's mean and hateful and hurtful just to try to make you mad. Well, it worked in my case. It really did. That one bothered me. And here it's been over 10 years and it still bothers me that parent would accuse me of that. What did Jesus do? He ignored it. And boy, that's easier said than done. When someone comes at you personally, it's really hard to just take the high road and ignore it. But that's what Jesus did. He ignored the comment and he continued to address the only valid argument. There's only one thing that we can discuss, and that is the authority of Jesus Christ. John 8:42, Jesus said to them, "If God were your Father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and came from God. Nor have I come of myself, but he sent me." He goes back to the exact same thing. It's the authority. He has the authority from God. Verse 30, 44, "You were of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do." Wow. So now the discussion is getting pretty rough. He says, "You are of the devil." So number 8, you know what the Pharisees do? Well, do we rightly say that you're nothing but a Samaritan and you have a demon? Do you realize what just happened? This whole time, Jesus has just called them and said, "You are not sons of Abraham, because if you were sons of Abraham, you wouldn't treat me this way." And then he says, "You're of your father the devil." And so what have they done? They did the old rubber and glue trick. You ever heard the rubber and glue trick? That was from a kid's show when I was growing up. "I'm rubber, you're glue, and whatever you say bounces off of you and sticks to me," or something like that. Bounces off of me and sticks to you. Where you try to twist it around and turn it. And the two things that Jesus had just questioned the Jews about, the Pharisees, now they try to turn it back on Jesus. They say, "Oh yeah? Well, if you think that we're not sons of Abraham, well guess what? You're not a son of Abraham either. You're nothing but a Samaritan." And they say, "Oh yeah, well you think we have a devil? Well, let me tell you something. We think you have a demon." It's the most juvenile, immature argument you could ever imagine. Whatever Jesus accused them of, They just turned it back on Jesus, and I can almost just see him with that little head shake that the little kids do. Oh, yeah, well, you too. Whatever you said, that's the same thing I'm saying about you. I can just see it. It's just the most juvenile, ridiculous argument you could ever have. In John's verse 49, Jesus says, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Most assuredly, verse 51, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death. And here they hear about death. And now they think they've got it. They think they're so smart. They say, oh yeah? Well, are you greater than our father Abraham, who is dead? Who do you make yourself out to be? Well, if he's dead, you think you're so great, then how come he's dead and you're not? And guess what we're doing? Oh, we're starting over the argument again. At least the third time now that we've questioned the authority of Jesus Christ. And he has had enough. John 8:54, Jesus answered, I honor myself. My honor is nothing. It is my Father who honors me, of whom you say that he is your God. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Wait a minute. Abraham's been dead for thousands of years. Jesus said that on purpose. He said that on purpose about Abraham rejoiced to see my day. And here's where the argument ends. The Pharisees come back. Oh, really? Well, you're not even yet 50 years old. How have you seen Abraham? And that is sarcasm. And let me tell you, when the quips start coming in and people start getting silly and sarcastic, you just need to end the conversation. You need to end the discussion because now it's just gotten silly and juvenile and the Pharisees have nothing left to say. Jesus has answered their question again and again, and now he's had enough. So when the discussion or argument turns to sarcasm, it's run its course, and it ceases to be productive. It's time to just be quiet. And Jesus is going to end the conversation very, very quickly, because he's already upset with them, and they're upset with him. So Jesus finishes his discussion in John 8:58. Jesus said to them, most assuredly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. And the Jews knew exactly what he meant by that. Jesus was claiming to be deity. He was claiming to be God when he says, I am. Remember, that goes all the way back to Exodus, I am that I am. Oh, they knew exactly what Jesus meant. And that did it. The Pharisees had had enough. It says they took up stones to throw at Jesus, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple and going through the midst of them and so passed by. And so Jesus kind of snuck out and hid. And that leads us to the Pharisee principle. The art of arguing. Did you pick up on a lot of things in some of the discussions that you've had and the arguments you've had with other people and maybe your kids, some of the same ridiculous things? Have you noticed how arguments have a tendency to circle back and forth and you can't get out of them? Have you noticed sarcastic little quips? Have you noticed lies? When people just flat out tell you stuff that's not wrong to try to prove a point? You know, all these things that I saw with the Pharisees, I got to thinking, boy, I see these a lot in discussions that I have as well. So I want to give you in conclusion the Pharisee principle. Number one, 5 points. Number one, only discuss valid parts of an argument. Don't get caught up in all the silliness. Did you notice Jesus time and time again kept going back to his authority and how he came from his Father and his Father sent him? Nearly everything that the Pharisees said was met with some type of redirection to the only valid point was the authority that Jesus had from God. And so he just kept talking about it over and over. Only discuss valid parts of an argument. Don't chase down the rabbit hole, because that's when arguments can get pretty ugly. Number two, avoid foolish discussions, including the twisting of words, lies, personal attacks, sarcasm, all those little tricks that the Pharisees used back then and people today use the same tricks. Avoid getting into foolish discussions that don't make any sense. It doesn't help anything. They're trying to divert your attention. And if you allow that to happen, then arguments can get brutal. Number three, be consistent in your defense. All Jesus had to say was, I was sent from my Father, I bear witness of myself, and my Father which is in heaven. And that was the consistent message he gave again and again and again and again until eventually he had enough. And he decided to end the conversation with his famous statement, before Abraham was, I am. And that was the way he ended it. Number four, once the argument begins to circle, you need to look for ways to end it, because it's not going to end well. Once that argument begins to start over a second and a third time, you need to find a way to get out of it. And Jesus certainly did. And finally, number five, know when to leave the discussion. And that's exactly what Jesus did. Jesus left the discussion. It says he hid in the temple while they went out to find rocks. And he just waited, and then he snuck out the back door, I suppose. Or he went out through the midst of them, he says. I don't know what that means. But Jesus, the Bible says, hid himself in the temple. Sometimes you need to know when it's time to leave the discussion. And so that is my Pharisee principle. It's a neat little story, because unfortunately, we're always going to be involved in discussions. We're always going to be involved in, do we want to call them arguments? We're always going to be involved in disputes, one with another. And there's a right way to argue, and there's a wrong way to argue. So I'll leave the lesson with you this morning. We'd never like to close, though, without having a song of invitation. If there's any need to help with the church, we stand ready to assist.